So give me your name, your title, and maybe a story about where MBK lives in your life. Then we'll go to your growing up and then your MBK stories and then recommendations. So your name, your title, and where MBK lives in your life.
Okay. My name is Dr. Chief Taylor. I am currently the assistant principal of Ross, the Ross Center at the high school. I am the MBK program director for Brentwood School District. We have programs at the middle school, the freshman center, and the high school. I've been involved in MBK. This will be my sixth year, going into my sixth year. And I am part of a small group, including our former assistant superintendent, Dr. Akil, Monique Akil, that wrote the grant to get started with MBK here in the school district.
Fantastic. So tell me, let's go back to growing up, because the young men created these questions and they want to know what in your growing up kind of prepared you or held you accountable to the kind of the work that you're doing now.
Okay. Well, anytime I have an opportunity to talk to young folks, I tell them I'm a child of the civil rights era. I came up through the school system, through the started the school system in the 60s, early 60s. I was raised, first of all, I'm a foster child. To this day, I don't know who my parents are. I was blessed to have great foster parents. But I grew up in a farming community that was still very much segregated when I was coming through school. So for instance, we weren't able to eat in the front part of the dining facilities or restaurants. We had to use, still had to use, believe it or not, had to use public bathrooms. I mean, separate public bathrooms, separate water fountains. And the school and the classroom, there wasn't a segregation as far as students on separate sides of the classroom, but definitely when it came to school dances, there we were segregated. So, you know, all the students of color were on one side and all the other folks were on the other side of the cafeteria, and the two didn't mix. It was just a known thing.
And where was this?
This was actually in South Jersey.
It's really important for us all to know. Yes. This is the northern
Woodstown, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Wolverine is their mascot. I can remember my mother was Methodist, but very religious, and she was. She just wanted all the kids to go to summer camp. So we went to the Catholic summer camp, which has a lot to do with, you know, part of the summer camp is religion, and then some part of the summer camp is activities. When it came to eating, we ate separately. We were required to bring our bag lunches. And the Catholic center or school had a pool, which we weren't allowed to go in, but we were allowed to play basketball on the court during the time that the other kids were in the pool. So I very much came up, you know, I tell folks all the time, I was a young, somewhat naive individual that had a chip on his shoulder. I was very angry, didn't know what I was particularly angry about. I don't know if it was angry because I wasn't with my biological parents. I don't know if it was angry because of the times that we came up in. But I was just an angry individual, and it didn't take a lot to set me off. So I tell the story that I really backed, when I say backed my way into education, I really backed my way into education. I went to the guidance counselor, as all students do, and the guidance counselor said to me, he goes, you're not a great student. And actually, I was a very poor student as far as academics. So guidance counselor said, we're going to put you into the Future Farmers of America course called FFA. I didn't know what I wanted to do in life per se, but I knew this. I worked, my father was a modern day sharecropper. He wasn't educated. And I can remember starting off, and we had a one bedroom house on a farm. And my father started off as a farm hand. So part of the, you know, part of the deal was you get to live on the farm and you need to live in this one bedroom house. We had a sheet separating the kitchen from the bedroom. We didn't have any running water. We had an outhouse, and we had a stove on the inside of the house, wood-burning stove. And so during the summertime, when we had the migrant workers come to the fields, I can remember, and you know, 10, 11, 12, working right alongside the migrant workers in the field. And I got to tell you, I made some of the best friends with the young folks. I had a great time, but I knew this. I didn't want to be a farmer. And even if I did want to be a farmer, I'd be a farm hand. You know, it wasn't like I had any money. It wasn't a legacy thing where, you know, generations, you know, are passed down the farm. You know, so I was a little disgruntled about going into FFA class, but they stuck me in there. And I can remember the first few days, some of the Caucasian kids in the classroom made a joke, because the classroom was like your typical technical shop. Half of it was blocked off by a cage where they had all the expensive equipment locked up. So one of the young men jokingly said, they go, "Let's throw a noose over the cage and hang the nigger." Like I said, it didn't take much for me to set me off. So I started throwing chairs, elbows, and anything that I could find. I wind up being subdued. I wind up getting expelled from school. And I can remember my foster mom going to the Board of Education and saying, look, she made a strong case. This is my son, blah, blah, blah. I think he's being mistreated, blah, blah, blah. And fortunately for me, they were starting a, and it's still there, Salem Vocational Technical School. Mm-hmm. It's the equivalent of what we call in New York BOCES program. Mm-hmm. So I went there my last 2 years of school. I took auto body and I took auto mechanic. I wasn't a great academic student in school, but down there at the technical school, I just flourished. So I had enough wits about myself to say that, you know what, I'm not sure. I think I know what I want to do. And I used to lay on the grass in the front yard and watch the planes fly over. So I said, you know what, I want to be a pilot in the military. So I'm going into the Air Force. So I took my ASVAB test. I scored very high on the ASVAB test. I was even trying to get an appointment to the Air Force Academy Prep School, but I failed the physical. Eyesight is poor and I'm half colorblind. So at the time I said, you know what, I'll be an aircraft mechanic. Unfortunately, aircraft mechanic wasn't open at the time. So I went in under open general, which I would never advise any young folks of doing because they can stick you anywhere. But I was blessed. And by the time I finished up my basic training, seats had opened up and I became a aircraft mechanic, and life really kind of took off for me there. Very successful in the military. My last duty assignment, well, I was an acting command chief for United States Strategic Command. That's the third highest enlisted position in the Air Force. Your top position is Chief Master Sergeant in the Air Force, and your second tier after that is your MAGCOM, Major Command Chief. So I sat in that seat. What a wonderful way to finish my career. I had went back to school basically out of necessity because, you know, I wanted to be a good father. I just had this thing that, you know, I'm going to be there for my son. He's going to know who his biological father, his biological parents were. And I got to tell you, when I sat down and I was doing his fourth grade homework, I was like, you know, this is kind of tough. So I wanted to be a role model. So I decided to go back to school. So by the time I was finishing my career, I had a master's degree. I had a degree from Emory-Riddle Aeronautical University. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I thought that education would be a good spot for me to land. So I applied for a educational program, doctoral program with Wilmington University. I was accepted. Now, here's the interesting thing that I tell folks when we talk about perseverance. So I got accepted to Wilmington University doctoral program in education. I'm still at United States Strategic Command. I started one semester before my official retirement date. It was close enough after 9/11 that airfare was cheap. So I had an agreement with my commander. I would fly into Philadelphia. My wife would pick me up on Philadelphia on Friday afternoon. She would drive me down to Delaware. I'd have classes Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. She would take me back to the Philadelphia airport, and then I would fly back to Nebraska. And I did that for the better part of a semester. One of the things, if you're in a doctoral program, you have to be affiliated with an educational institution. So I said, my counselors told me the closest way to get into the classroom is junior ROTC. I'm in Nebraska. I'm flying to Philadelphia. My wife is in New Jersey in her home. My classes are in Delaware. And I accepted the only position they had open, because I was bucking up against the wire, was Brentwood, New York. So I accepted a position in Brentwood, New York. When I came in and I talked with the superintendent and I talked with the principal, I let them know that I was in a doctoral program. They were very supportive. So I can remember initially I was taking the Long Island Railroad into the city, taking that train down to Delaware, getting off at Delaware, getting in a taxi cab, going over to the college. Wow. My wife would meet me down there. And then she would drive me back to New Jersey. I would catch a bus from our town in New Jersey. That takes you back into the city, and then the Long Island Railroad back out to Brentwood.
What year was that?
This was around, I accepted the position here in 2004.
Got it.
Yeah, so 2004.
Yeah. So almost 3 years ago.
Yeah. After a couple weeks of that, it was crazy. I was just burning myself out. I'd have to pre-position my car here, so then I would have, when I came back into town, I'd have a car to go home. So I wind up again with the graces of my superintendent and my supervisor. They allowed me to leave work a couple hours, and I just took the drive from Long Island, New York to Delaware. Now, here's the interesting thing. Part of that doctoral program, it's also an administrative preparation program, and they have you take your administrator test during your last year with the program prior to defending. I had actually got my certification in Delaware, and I'm thinking, I'm still in ROTC, junior ROTC. I say, I'm going to start applying for administrator positions, first and foremost in my school district, but certainly in New York. And folks will say, well, why New York? Why not New Jersey? But by that time, I was almost vested in the pension system. So right. I was kind of, it made financial sense for me to stay in New York. When I went to apply for my certification, they told me that New York does not recognize Delaware certification. There's a thing called reciprocity. Now, if I had my certification in New York, Delaware would accept it. New York would, but not vice versa.
Yeah.
So I said at the time, what does that mean? I said, I'll just go back and take the New York State test. Well, you can't do that because you have to go through a New York State certification preparation program. So I wind up, after receiving my doctoral degree, I wound up going back to school another 3 years for a master's program and administrator preparation, just to have the privilege to take the New York State test.
Wow.
I got to tell you, I went through that. It wasn't all that terrible except for the expense and the time, because I had just finished a doctoral program. The work was mine. So mm-hmm. there was a lot of things that I could flip around without a lot of work for the right. requirements of the administrator's preparation program is, for Stony Brook. When it came time to take the test, there's a three-part test that you have to take. And at last, I think it's somewhere around 10 hours total. So foolish me, I said, you know what? I'm good to go. I'm just going to take the test all in one shot. I took it the first time. I passed one part. I failed the other two parts. I was a little disappointed, and I said, okay, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to just, now that I got one out of the way, I'll just focus on the other two. I went back in, and I failed both the second and the third part of the test. So I was really devastated. So then I said, you know what? I'm just going to focus on one test. So I went back in, and I took the one test. I passed the one test. And I went back, and you know, it's not an immediate turnaround. You got to wait for the grades to be posted. Then you got to fall back into the testing cycle. I mean, so you're talking about a 60-day type of turnaround. So I went back and I took the third part of the test, and I failed the third part of the test. I said, I'm going to do this until I get it right. I went back in a second time, just taking the third part of the test, and I passed the third part of the test. And the interesting thing about it, so I get my results, and then a couple months later, I get a letter from the state saying that they're waiving the certain portions of the test because they have to be rewritten because they found some inconsistencies and problems in it. I kind of scratched my head, kind of, you know, and said, you know what, I'm good. I got my test scores. I can get my my certification. And I was blessed in the school district to get my first. Well, and this is a story too. So I went and interviewed with an interview panel, and then I made it to the second round, to where you interview with the superintendent. And then I made it to the third round, where you interview with the Board of Education. And I was selected to be an assistant principal by the board. And then I was notified, and this was like May timeframe, school year ends in June. Around the second week of June, I got called up to the superintendent's office, and he says, Dr. Taylor, we have a problem. We have some budget issues, and unfortunately, we're not going to be able to execute your contract.
Wow.
You just can't make this up.
Wow.
So I said, you know what? I'm happy what I'm doing. I have the belief that, you know, my principal believes in me, the superintendent believes in me, the PTA believes in me, and sooner or later, at some point in time, you know, a position will open back up. Fortunate enough, a year later, things turned around in the district, and I was appointed the assistant principal of the freshman center.
Wow.
So that's kind of a short story of my career. I was moved to the high school last March to fulfill a long vacant position. The superintendent thought I would be the best fit to move over. Most people move at the end of the year. He needed to make a move immediately, and he thought I was the best person to come over to the high school. So
it's a beautiful story you tell, but also how you tell it. Mm-hmm. It's so gorgeous because it's mm-hmm. a story of hard times, obstacles, opportunities, mm-hmm. elbows and chairs. Right. At one point, there could have been elbows mm-hmm. and chairs at other points in your story, whether it was the test or running out of money for the district. But it's also a story of both having the opportunity for second chances, but finding yeah. second chances,
right.
which mm-hmm. feels very MBK to me.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've heard from the young men and the mentors mm-hmm. is, and I know because I do a lot of work in mm-hmm. underfunded school districts and wealthy school districts and juvenile justice, and I know that the big difference between kids who make it and kids who are left behind is mm-hmm. rich kids get second chances. and mistakes get erased. And if you have somebody advocating for you, you get a good psychiatrist and a lawyer and not juvenile, or you get restorative justice and not expelled. And unless you have a mama who's going to go to the school board, the capacity for gravity to pull, particularly kids of color, out of systems and into much more punitive systems. It's like those systems are waiting. And so one of the things that I've come to think about MBK is it creates kind of a like an ecosystem of care and catching and responsibility and lifting as we climb. And it's you know, in the beginning, I was like, where are the girls and what's up with, you know, is this a fraternity and all that?
Right.
And it's so beautiful about elders holding young people, but young people holding each other. And understanding they're responsible to reach back, kind of like so many of the opportunities you talked about that for you were fraught. So the church was still segregated. The pool was still segregated. The school was not going to suspend those boys who threatened to bring a noose, but they were going to suspend you. Those tests that were wrong, they never apologized to all of the kids who failed. I remember when they were testing out Regents, and it was early 2000s, and the kids in Scarsdale failed the chemistry test in a big way. So they knew something was wrong with the test. But when the kids in Bushwick failed the chemistry test, nobody said, oh, there must be something wrong with the test. So I appreciate that you left chairs and elbows behind. And I love how you told the story, but tell me about your entrance into an experience with MBK.
My interest into MBK, Dr. Monique Darisol Akil is really a pioneer. She left the school district and she's now a superintendent. But she came to me because she was over the secondary school, which the high school obviously falls under. And she knew of me. She knew of my work in the junior ROTC program and thought that I would be a good fit and partner working with her to bring the MBK program to Brentwood. I was very much interested. Obviously, I worked with a lot of young men in the ROTC program. And, you know, the thing that I find, and we're just now kind of coming full circle with our restorative justice program within the school district, is we kind of, there's one of the smartest things, or one of the memorable things I remember when I interviewed for an ROTC position with my principal. He opened the door at one point during the interview, and it was during bell change. And you saw all the kids walking through high school, walking to the high school. And he goes, "These are the young kids that you're going to be working with. Most of them, predominantly Hispanic, a lot of African American, but you know, we have students represented from every country in the world." Basically, what he was saying to me, you're going to be working with people from varying backgrounds, varying socioeconomic backgrounds, and a couple things you need to remember. Number one, just because a student comes from a low social and economic background does not mean that A, they don't have worth, B, that they can't learn, and two, that you should somehow show pity on them. Now, empathy is one thing. Pity is another, because we have to maintain, push them to achieving their highest potential while they're in, you know, the walls of high school. And you can't do that if you're relaxing standards before, because you feel pity for them. The other thing that he said is that when you're talking about a high school, you're talking about folks, teenagers, who in a moment, your mind would think that they're adults. And even though they're in grown-up bodies, they're still adolescents. So never forget your role as a teacher. Never forget your role as a mentor. Never allow yourself to lower yourself, no matter how angry you are, to their level when dealing with students. And I really kind of took that to heart. The other thing that I knew that wasn't necessarily a prevalent, thought within the building is getting back to where students come from varying backgrounds. You don't per se know what the value system is, what the family structure is, or certainly the issues that the typical child has to deal with before they even come to school. So a lot of times, like in my case, when I was coming up in school and I hadn't really figured out things, but I had a chip on my shoulder, you can't take that exterior surface of how the student is presenting themselves and allow yourself not to say, let me try varying approaches to try to reach this student. Number one, get to know them, get to know a little bit about them. You're certainly not going to be able to solve all of their issues, but if you understand from where they're coming from, a little bit about themselves, then you can understand, you have an appreciation for sometimes when they come across a little hard or they're a little short. And certainly as an adult, you have to acknowledge that and find and create ways of breaking through that exterior surface to make human connections with the students in order to the ultimate goal is to improve their, their academic outcomes. So, I was this was something that I had a passion about because I knew that, just one slight shift and the way things occurred in my timeline growing up, I could have been incarcerated because that's the type of mindset I had. I was fortunate enough, the world was waiting
because a lot of people have that mindset. People like me didn't end up there, but go ahead.
Right. So, if by my life as an example, my understanding of my culture, if I can provide and make connections with young men, then certainly, and because, the biggest mentor I had when I was coming up was the Baptist minister. he didn't have mentors like he had. Now, everybody's big on mentorship today, but he didn't have that during the time that I was coming up. So certainly if I can, in some small way, fill some of those voids and inspire other people to join your movement within the sphere of a people that you come in contact with or have an impact with, then we can turn this thing into a great program and serving the young men of our community.
So what was the original vision and where is it now and where do you hope it is in 5 years?
Well, the original vision was to, according to the overall vision, is to change the academic trajectory of young men. Uh-huh. As we know that young men have lower graduation rates.
Yep.
They have lower rates going into post-secondary education, and they certainly have lower rates in graduating. So anything that we can do to impact that and affect it in a positive way, that's what that's what the MBK program was about. Now, getting from there to there is creating a safe space for young men to come together, talk about common things that affect all of us, providing some mentorship to you're not going to solve every problem, but you're going to help that student, if not solve the problem, come up with ways of how to deal with the situation in a positive manner. And then wrapped and intertwined in all that is exposing them to the college application process, because a lot of students don't see themselves going to college. Mm-hmm. Letting them know that there are opportunities for you to go to college, and whether it be at the local community college or whether it be at your colleges and your university, exposing them to that culture by college trips, and giving them a roadmap. Okay, you know, I can't change what you did from the time you entered the school system to the time you came to the freshman center, because we just branched out into the middle school last year. But certainly, and this is the critical, and it, actually this is the critical time, you know, once you enter the freshman center, which is considered part of high school, making those decisions and choices about what courses you take and the things that you need to do to put yourself in the position to take advantage of those opportunities, to at least have the opportunities available to you to take advantage of once you graduate from high school.
A really important, you know, both in your biography and your professional vision, that we can't erase what came before, that we're not going to make believe your biological family didn't. We're not going to make believe elementary school was great, but we can take this moment and reimagine what's possible.
Absolutely.
That's deep. Can you tell me about a surprise as you've been facilitating MBK, a story about you or you and a young person or you and a piece of work that surprised you, disappointed you, changed the trajectory of the program?
You know, being in the junior ROTC program, I knew this going in, and that sometimes you don't know the small acts and gestures that you do that have a profound effect on a student. And this comes to light that when, after they're long since have graduated from high school, they continue to reach back and seek you out for advice, whether it's to say hi and acknowledge you, or, you know, just because they think of you in such a way that they're willing to open themselves up to ask, to discuss a problem and seek advice. I mean, that's the, you know, that's the greatest reward that any educator could ever receive. And you know what? You're gonna get that from the you know, from the average to the, you know, the honor roll student. That's commonplace. But the students that struggled through high school, and even the ones where you had to sit down and you've had to talk too firmly, you've had to, you know, do some administrative discipline. But you pushed them through, you got them to set goals for themselves and want to make it through high school. Those folks come back and talk to you when you would think that they would be the last people that would want to reach out and make contact. I mean, that continually reward is a rewarding experience, and it inspires me to keep going further. But there was an interesting story. And it happened last year, and it's going to be at the top of my list when I talk about great experiences in the MBK program. Part of our MBK program is we have a fellows program, which is, I tell folks, the easiest way to explain our fellows program is it's similar to a term that most people are familiar with, your Eagle Scout program. Mm-hmm. So fellows are at the top of our leadership positions within the MBK. They're nominated. There's a formal appointment ceremony, and it's a very, very prestigious position. There's a number of requirements that they have to fulfill, because they're given a stipend to help them out through college when they graduate from high school. And part of that is community service. They have to, you know, develop some community service project, working in concert and conjunction with their fellows mentor. And so we had one young man, and he was working on his community service project was a spring Easter egg hunt at the elementary schools. And he held two events. We have four elementary schools, and he had two events. But what was unique, it was not only your traditional, you know, activities for the kindergarten students, you know, and the Easter egg portion of the festivities, but he had a lot of health services that set up booths at that. We had food drives to where parents could pick up a bag of food, canned goods, dry goods, hygiene items. And then we had taken, you know, health screenings, Mm-hmm. And then we had a number of your community sport organizations had booths set up there. So while the kids were out doing their thing, working their way through the different activities, the parents had an opportunity to receive a lot of information, certainly goods and services while they were at that event. So it was a fantastic, great community service project for one of our fellows. But during the second event, anytime you have a large gathering, you normally call and see if you can get some EMT support. You know, God forbid something happens, you know, you have somebody right there on site that can provide emergency first responder care. So it was a lady that was working on the EMT vehicle. And so, you know, if all goes well, they don't do anything and they're bored out of their tears. They're bored to tears.
Yeah.
So she's just standing on the outside of the vehicle with her comrades, and she's seeing all the activities, and she goes, who's responsible for all this? So one of the librarians that we have is one of our mentors for our fellows. It wasn't her fellow that she mentored, but certainly she was familiar with the fellows program because she was a mentor. And she goes, oh, that's, you know, our fellows, they have to do a community service project. So the lady was like, so this is what they do? And she goes, no. There's a number of things that they do. This just happens to be a community service project. They have a number of community service events that they participate in the year. And they're part of a larger group of an MBK community and she gave the A to Z of how the program is structured with their weekly meetings, their guest speakers, the college field trips, and, you know, the A to C are basically on the MBK program. The lady turned around and said to her at the end of all this, she goes, just by looking at this young man, I know that this is a wonderful program and it certainly has an impact on the community. She said, I am willing. She goes, how many fellows do you have? And she said, we have four fellows. She goes, I am willing to sponsor your four fellows and pay for full ride scholarships to any college they want to go to in the state.
Well,
that just blows you out of the water. And she has came through on that promise.
Well,
that's where, you know, you really see the impact of the impressions that you're making on the community.
That's a beautiful story because, you know, MBK seems rooted in schools, but when it's powerful, and we've talked to a number of districts and almost all of them, it mm-hmm. seeps out. I think it's harder in some big cities. Mm-hmm. It looks like some just subcontract with partners. Mm-hmm. We won't talk a lot about that in the report, but mm-hmm. when it's deep in a school and anchored and then seeps out, the mm-hmm. capillaries, the runoff is mm-hmm. like contagious,
right.
like good yes. karma. And then right. people who don't know how to, you know, how mm-hmm. do I help kids that I don't even right. know? Who am I?
Right.
All mm-hmm. of a sudden have an opportunity to say, I want to be a part of this movement.
Yes.
That's a
yes.
great story. That's great. So tell me about your MBK high experiences and then what you think should be changed or extended. And then I'll let you get back to work. And thank you for your time.
My MBK high experiences, every year just brings a new level of satisfaction from being in the program. And I'll tell you about one experience. And, you know, this year we were fortunate enough that Ms. Himes had reached out earlier in the year and she goes, you know what, I'm going to come to your MBK empowerment ceremony. Huh. Fine, you know, great to have you. You know, meanwhile, you're stressing. You know, I can remember being in the military and we had base inspections and stuff, and you have your base inspectors come in from Washington, D.C., and everybody's on pins and needles. We got the troops plucking dandelions out of the grass. We're painting everything that doesn't move. You know, so flashbacks of that anxiety certainly happened.
In New York City, you know, you could tell when a school's going to be evaluated because it smells like paint. You can smell the paint. Go ahead.
So we're coming up on the in the NDK ceremony. It's called an empowerment brunch. We have it at the end of the year, and it's really a celebration of all the things our MBK students were involved in through the course of the year. It provides us an opportunity to provide some recognition to those that really stood out. We have a number of giveaways, including a laptop computer that we give to all the seniors that are graduating from the program. One of the big things that I was able to bring into the program during our first year is it's called the tie tying ceremony. So, you know, one of the first things that toward the end of the ceremony, we kind of recognize our MBK fellows. And then the last thing that we do as a group activity is we have all the young men come in with collared shirts. And we provide MBK ties for all the students. And we tell the students, you know, pick them, you know, you can pick your father, you can pick your mother, you can pick your minister, your coach, somebody that has been instrumental in the success that you have achieved or had an impact on your life thus far, invite them to kind of tie the tie around your neck. And it's a ceremony that acknowledges that they're going from being just an adolescent to a young adult. It's like a crossing over ceremony. And when I first thought of it, I was like, you know, how is this going to come across? You know, it's going to be corny or whatever. It darn right gets almost emotional because of the pride just swells up in people that are tying that tie around the young man's neck, and the young man is standing up straight, and it's you can see the pride in their faces. So that is definitely one of the high points of our ceremony, and we had it this year. But the interesting thing was Ms. Himes had an opportunity to see that. You know, you're always behind the scenes, and you know the amount of stuff that you're working on to make sure that you have a successful program, to include student attendance, because certainly once you get past the second week of June, you know, students start to zone out. Yeah. And trying to make sure that you have a quorum of students, you know, you're just kind of like, oh, I just want all the pieces to come together. And all the pieces just came together this last year in our MBK Empowerment Brunch. The high point of the ceremony, and I was the MC of the ceremony, we had politicians, we had sheriffs, we had commissioners, we had local leaders in the church. We had judges from all walks of life that are in the top of their professions. And I'm talking male role models that came. And the unfortunate thing about that is when you get all these folks to show up in one room, you know, part of the deal that you have to accept is everybody wants to have a speaking part. You know, so as much as you go around and you politely say, you know, you're this, you know, here goes the itinerary, this is your part in the itinerary, I'll give a brief introduction, please keep your comments short. Nobody was keeping their comments short. So I'm sweating over that. But then a high point came because part of this ceremony is to focus on the accomplishments and the talents of our students. So we had one student that came up and they talked about the MBK Buffalo and the shooting that they had there and the fundraiser that we was doing to support that community. Because, you know, one of the things with that community, the shooting took place in a convenience store. It was one of the few convenience stores in this part of the town. And it had been shut down and it hadn't reopened up. So people had to travel kind of outside their normal zone to get goods and services. So you had a lot of organizations that were setting up temporary camps there to make sure that the food and the support and the services were available. Well, this young man stood up and, you know, obviously we had several conversations, but he talked about a fundraising activity to provide some goods and services to the MBK Buffalo students to let them know that we support them as our brothers and we stand with them in solidarity. Beautiful speech. He also talked about before the last day of school, having a stand outside the classrooms, not a walkout, but a stand outside the classroom and hold hands while they would talk about, you know, the lives lost in that MBK community, which he talked about it at, and it wound up being a beautiful, beautiful event. But then we went to MBK performances because we have students that are real. We have students that are on, that sit on environmental councils with the Islip Town Ship Council. We have students that are, you know, football players, sports players, land of land. So we had a student that played two selections on the piano, which were beautiful. And then we had a student that, you know, because some of our students are into rap. And he made a rap that talked about the MBK students in Buffalo and the community. Came across beautiful. My heart just swelled up with pride as all these things were unfolding. And going into this event, I was sweating. You know, we're going to have some outsiders looking in, but I didn't even have to be there. This would, you know, because the program showcases itself. Because of all the things that our students are involved in, they just get a small opportunity to give our parents and our guests a taste of what they go through throughout the school year. And it came across beautiful. And I tell you, I came back to my office because it was here at the school and our gymnasium. And I was so worked up that I had to sit here for about 15 minutes just to kind of calm down, zone down, and just take it all in and have a deep, heartfelt appreciation for what had just occurred.
Wow. Is that rap available?
I think it was recorded.
Can you?
Let me see.
I would love to include that in the report as an example of the kind of solidarity young men are developing.
Right. Yep. Let me see if I can find it.
If you could find it, that'd be great. All right. My last question, and you've been generous and brilliant, is what would you recommend for either expanding or enhancing or altering how the money comes in or the kinds of priorities around MBK? You know, people say it's a program. No, it's a movement. No, it's a and yet the state has very specific contours on how money flows. So any recommendations?
Well, I you know, last year was a challenge for us because we went into the new grant of our program. The previous grant had expired and a new grant kind of took over. So the initial grant was when we were just forming our MBK program, and it gave a lot of avenues for financial support to getting our clubs and our activities up and running and our field trips.
Sure.
The second part of the grant, in the way that it was written, really talks about family and community engagement. So there was a shift away from the providing all the financial support to running your individual MBK program to a much broader encompassing perspective in your family community engagement. And that, and you know, as the program director, and I work directly with Dr. Leone, which is in charge of funded programs, and obviously our assistant superintendent and superintendent, it created challenges for us in keeping our programs viable and up and running. Was able to find a good way to integrate those things so that they were supporting, mutually supportive of each other. And I'll give you an example. One of the things with family community engagement, it talked about establishing parent communities and parent connectors, and where we would train these parent connectors and all the general processes of the school district, you know, how you go through the process, your guidance counselors and setting up the courses to provide for students to sign up, all those things. So number one, they would be better informed because that's a big challenge for our particular school district. Right. Bear in mind that we're a low socioeconomic. We are a high Spanish-speaking community. We are a community that both parents have to work outside the home. And generally, a large portion of our kids are latchkey kids that leave to come to the school in the morning, and in most cases, come back to the house in the evening, and the parents are still out and about. So we're trying to get the school districts come up with innovative ways every year to try to make these connections and get the information out. Parent connectors was another way of, okay, we're going to train parent connectors and all the processes and the student portal and how to access grades and all the general processes in the school district. And then they in turn are going to reach out to their small group communities to pass this information out. And obviously a lot of them, you have the advantages of, they're speaking the same language. They're parents. They understand the culture. And certainly that we had a feeling that this, and well, the state had a feeling that this would be a much more, not much more effective way, but a supplement to all the things the school districts are already doing to make better connections with parents. So we set up our parent connectors, and they have just been wonderful in communicating with the parents. And along with that, because they're somewhat associated with the MBK program, we're able to work on joint ventures together when it comes to community support and providing services and information to the community. So it's been just a great partnership, and I think it gives us compounds, and you had talked about this previously, the tentacles of exposure that you have making those connections to the community.
That's great. I mean, two things seem clear though. One is the more you get to know the young people, the more you know what needs to be done to fill the gaps that our society has left vacant, whether it's 3 to 8 o'clock or food or health care or protection from systems that are waiting for them. And then you realize we have to involve family and community. Mm-hmm. And with the same resources, something has to give. So it sounds like you've been creative about figuring out how to expand resources, use leverage. But I'm hearing from a number of districts, MBK allows us to really radically imagine what are these young people deserve and need with limited resources. That's tricky. Right. I mean, I feel it at CUNY. I used to teach at University of Pennsylvania. They had more money than God, right? And now at CUNY, not only don't we have a lot of money, but we know these gorgeous students are holding down 2 jobs and taking care of their grandmother and their little sister. And we saw it on Zoom. The little sister pop up out of the bed because everybody's doing triple duty. And and the more you know and develop kind of a muscle that they deserve so much, it becomes hard with limited resources.
So I'm not going to sit here and complain to you that, because if you had a magic wand, everybody always wants more money. What I'm here to tell you is that we definitely have some challenges, and no matter what organization you're part of, you're going to have those challenges, and we've had nothing but great support from the state. One of the things that we were able to implement in the district this last school year was the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council within the district. First time that council stood up, and all of our fellows were student advisors. Now, they could have went to any group, the Honors Society group, the Student Council group. They could have went to any group. They thought enough of our students that our students were at the top of the list for sitting on that diversity equity. And they were recognized for their work by the state. And they provided invaluable input in how we go forward. And not only with the programs and stuff that we have to support a student, but right down to the curriculum that we have, and making sure that it's more inclusive. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. It's another good example. I heard it the other day, but do you know what this talk to thing is? It's teacher opportunity, but I think of it as teacher of color, but it's teacher opportunity. Yes. Anyway, but it sounds like even at the university level, like the talk to Nichols, then it's like a watercolor. You know, this one woman from upstate said, and then we had to change our admissions policies and our curriculum. And our pedagogy, and we realize, oh, damn, we're creating black singletons in these all-white schools, and they're drowning. Right. So we had to create an alumni group, and that just the intervention that says we must pay attention then shifts up everything. All right, you have given us so much, and it is 10 o'clock. I thank you for your time. I will send you your recording as soon as it downloads. Can you send me a photo and a little bio?
I sent it to you this morning.
Oh, you did? Fantastic.
Yeah. You sent out a 7 something this morning, and I responded to that.
Fantastic. And if you could find that rap.
I'll look for that rap video. Yes, ma'am.
I'm looking for a creative way to open the report that doesn't scare the upstate legislators, but speaks to the aesthetics and the ethics of MBK. So I'm walking a balance, but somewhere in that report, I would love that. Thank you, ma'am. Sir.
Yes, ma'am. Take care.
Have a good year. See you.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be communicating with you. Bye.
Good.